All right, go ahead and good afternoon. We're going to go ahead and start this meeting for the Reedy Planning Commission dated March 19th, Thursday of 2015. We're going to go ahead and do the Pledge of Allegiance. So if everybody could stand and salute the flag. Ready, begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. All right, so we're going to go ahead and take roll call, please, for attendance.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutierrez?
Here.
Commissioner Hudson?
Here.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yeah, here. All right, so this portion is the public comment portion of this meeting. This provides an opportunity for the members of the public to address the Planning Commission on items of interest to the public within the Commission's jurisdiction and which are not already on the agenda this evening. Does anybody have any comments, concerns? No? All right, let's move on.
Not yet.
All right, so now we're going to go ahead and listen to staff for our consent agenda. We have a public hearing that was continued from March 5th, 2015, and agenda number two. Mr. Fabino, you have the floor.
Kevin Fabino, Community Development Director. Before you this evening is conditional use permit application number 2014-05, vesting tentative tract map number 06096, environmental assessment 2014-21, and a proposed draft development agreement for what's being called the Kings River Village mixed-use project. So let me start my presentation. Of course, you know I love to tell stories. And so you may remember about 2 years ago, the city embarked on an economic development tour and did all kinds of things that splashed in the paper. One of the outcomes of that effort was two people, Jan and Ken Enns, who came to visit me one day and said, hey, we want to do economic development. And we've been told no for a long time. And we have a 20-acre parcel, and we want to develop it. And so I said, where is it? And we had a long talk. And I think the thing that really caught my attention was I was lucky enough to hear from Ken, who told me the story about how he grew up on the farm and all kinds of really great things. And I looked at him and I basically said, look, you bring a signature project and, you know, we understand the general plan is a living, breathing document. And if we have that signature project, which is what they wanted a legacy project, that we could probably make it happen. So here we are, kind of exciting. We think it's a great project. We're pleased to be before you. I know Ken and Jan Enns and members of their team are here. Maybe say something a little bit later in the show, I mean in the presentation. But that being said, here we go, maybe. So the Kings River Village, what is this project? This project actually is being proposed by the Kings River Community Partners, LLC. And we are anticipating that the developer will be here just shortly. They're traveling a distance and probably got held up in some traffic. But that being said, it's proposed to a great project on 38.7 acres, and it is proposed as a mixed-use project. Generally speaking, the project's located on the south side of Dinuba between Buttonwillow and Zumwalt, and the project's being proposed in four phases. The uses that we're going to talk about this evening are going to be a medical or office professional use, a commercial retail, and a recreational use. Proposed are approximately 341 residential units. And just for clarity early on, those units come in a variety of styles and opportunities, from multiple family to senior to single family. And we'll talk more in detail about that in a minute. It also is proposing approximately 155,000 square feet of commercial retail space. I just mentioned the subject property. This is an aerial of the subject property as it stands today. You might even notice that, for example, Ken did pull out the orchard probably 6 months ago, and the old homestead is on the northwest corner of the property. The property lies between what we know as the storage facility and the regional park. To the north of the subject property, you know there's existing housing development, and it is the Kings River Commons housing development that we're so excited that's been open for a couple months. Beautiful project. So this is where the project's located. As I mentioned earlier, the project is proposed in four phases. The top right-hand corner of the project, identified as phase one, shows kind of a salmon color, which is proposed as office. The green kind of U-shaped or C-shaped area is identified primarily as the commercial component in phase one. Phase two is single family, directly to the south of that. It's identified in the blue. Phases three and four are both residential. The yellow, if you will, identified as phase three, is primarily a senior housing development component. That's the concept that's being presented, and then market rate through phase four. In the center is what is referred to as a recreational open space area. The area also includes a transit center. Again, this is really a slide of the same thing. I've just kind of walked you through all the phases and all the different product types that are identified. This is the tentative map. I thought I'd show you this just as a quick quiz. Remember, we talked about this really recently. The word vesting is clearly identified. There's a timestamp, and all the lots are clearly identified as how they will be divided and subdivided. Again, this is a tentative map, and so in the future, they will bring in the final map. That being said, of course, as the Planning Commission is always wants to know, is the project consistent with the general plan? Absolutely. We wouldn't be here otherwise. As you know, that it is consistent with the overall guiding principles, not only of the general plan, but also of the San Joaquin Valley blueprint, smart growth principles. Those are elaborated in greater detail in your staff report. But most importantly, as we always talk about, based on Reedley's history, how important preservation of agriculture is. These were, you know, did have peach orchards and nectarines and other kinds of things on it. But the fact of the matter is it is in the city, and it really is to be urbanized at some point. And so one of the things it does is, because it's available, it means we don't really have to grow outside of the city and consume unnecessarily additional land. We'll talk in a minute about the requirements of the Reedley Municipal Code, but it does have a rather significant density range, which is also important as we try to make sure that our city's compact and, again, don't unnecessarily sprawl. It does seek a balance and with respect to compatibility of land use patterns. Again, you know, it's a residential. It seems to make sense that it's kind of squeezed, if you will, between residential on the north, a regional sports complex to the east, some limited development to the south, as you know, the CVTC, which would be a great project for the city. I know they've had their grand opening. I know they're getting ready to go out to bid. That, you know, that's a nice, nice buffer to the south. Obviously, the open space characteristic is an integral part of the project and something that is really important to us in the community. It is consistent with Reedley Municipal Code. You might recall we brought about a year ago a text amendment that talked about how mixed use projects could proceed in the city of Reedley. One of the components was to look at not only making sure that there's compact development and infill that occurs, but how do we do that in parcels that may have been bypassed? So arguably, the parcel, actually the parcel that is the church parcel, which is the second 20 acres, actually the piece that is directly adjacent to the regional sports Park, and that's a fallow for a very, very long time and been bypassed by potential development. So we're always trying to figure out ways to make sure that that doesn't occur. So one of the things that the mixed-use ordinance did was it said in industrial zone districts under certain kinds of criteria, mixed-use projects could go forward. This is one of those cases. And some of the requirements in the Reedley Municipal Code Section 1013.9 identifies things like you must have 20 units to the acre. There can't be significant development, an active industrial development of certain types surrounding the property. This project fulfills and meets all of the criteria identified in the code sections. The developer has proposed a development agreement, as we described to you and described to others. The conditions of approval that we give to the project tell everybody what's going to happen. So you have conditions related to the tentative map that are before you this evening for your consideration. Those outline, thou shall provide hookups to water, sewer, things of that sort. But the development agreement is a little bit unique in that what it really does is it tells everybody when things are going to occur and kind of within that context of when, how. So, for example, the developer has requested to have their vesting extended for 10 years. So that's, you know, when, how long, and when those things will occur. How we're going to handle fee credits, making sure that everybody understands the obligations of the developer, the responsibilities and obligations of the city. So it really sets out when those roles are going to move forward. And again, as I've indicated, it is pursuant to the government code, section 65864 and through 65869.5, which really talks about a development agreement as strengthening the planning process. And again, as I've described, to talk about making sure everybody understands what those obligations are as they move forward. The development agreement that was presented to you this evening fundamentally contains all the elements subject to the law and the other key elements which have been mutually agreed to by the parties. I would call your attention to, let me make sure I have it in front of me, on the dais you have a two-page document. Those are excerpts. Ellen, could I have one of those, please? Actually, if you have another one, I'd sure appreciate it. Thank you. Sorry about that. So these are excerpts. As I indicated in the staff report, that this is a work in progress, but fundamentally we're all there. There were two suggestions that were made to us. I received them about 3 o'clock-ish today, and we think they're reasonable and really not material and changing significantly. It just kind of points of clarification. That being said, we wanted to present that to you so that you saw what those changes are. The first change, and primarily on page 4, is just really a clarification of in reference to other paragraphs. The other is that all entitlements shall run with the properties. That's consistent with the code. I think that's consistent with our understanding and of what the developer understands is what we're all trying to achieve.
You're talking about the corrections that are in red?
Exactly.
Okay.
Only the corrections in red.
Thank you.
I want to talk briefly about CEQA, as we always do. As you know, CEQA is something that is used to identify the impacts of a project. In this case, we sent out information and we gathered information from responsible and trustee agencies. From that, we prepared an initial study, and pursuant to that initial study, Appendix G checklist, in accordance with the CEQA guidelines, was prepared. As the lead agency, as we always are with projects like this, we made the determination that the project does not wholly or fully fall within the scope of the certified program EIR related to the general plan, and therefore a mitigated negative declaration was proposed for the project. Those mitigation measures specific to the project, inclusive of the mitigation measures that are required through the program EIR, clearly reflect in the administrative record that the project in and of itself would not indirectly or cumulatively have an environmental impact on the project or surrounding area. I did want to take 1 minute and or so and talk about the traffic mitigation. And there's a couple things to be aware of. Remember that one of the things that the general plan talks to or speaks to is when a traffic impact study is required. And there are thresholds set out in the general plan. They generally speak to things like if there's 500 trips a day that are generated or 25% increase in a segment. Those are the things that require additional and technical studies. The traffic impact study was provided to you. It basically identified several things. There are basically four areas in the city that the project has an impact on. Mitigation measures have been written to address the applicant paying their proportionate share of that impact as that impact occurs on really the really outer component of the project, really closer to full build out, as well as, you know, really closer to 2030. But that's important to know, and that is a mitigation measure, and that's an important mitigation measure. And the developer has agreed to those mitigation measures. I selected this slide to show you for a couple of reasons. One, I wanted to talk just real briefly about the roundabout. You may be kind of wondering why a roundabout there. And it's really for several reasons. One, if you look at kind of the area in and of itself, where, you know, the subject property is divided into two 20-acre parcels, kind of the green on one side and the tan on the other. So that is where the applicant really proposes to have the main entry. So when we looked at it, I mean, the easy and probably, I guess, arguably, and, you know, the developer would say is the cheaper answer is to signalize it. But the problem with that really became that it wasn't at the half mile, which is typically where you would put it. It wasn't at the eighth mile, which isn't typically where you put it. It's really kind of doesn't match up with any intersections. So how do you really do this? And so I think we sat, we talked, and, you know, I really appreciate the developer and his consultant. We worked really hard to figure out what is really the best way to do, to figure out how do we get people in and out? How do we design it in a way that will move transportation effectively through the city? Because we know that is a gateway coming from Dinuba, right? Heavily trafficked road. So it was agreed to that that was the place for a roundabout. The roundabout is also designed in such a way that it could actually be expanded, just like the roundabout at Button Willow and Dinuba now. We do have kind of one lane, but it has been designed so that it could be expanded in the future. This roundabout, reflected in this, is really designed in that same manner. So it really is a great way that everybody sat at the table and was able to figure out how do we make this work best for everybody. Because really, from the developer's standpoint, and we clearly understand it, the entry feature is absolutely critical. You know, how do people get in and out of their development as it builds out? Again, that's kind of the rationale that we came up with. It seems to work well for everybody and something we all agreed to. That being said, we always think it's important to make sure that the commission understands and knows that there's a whole public outreach process that goes along with every project pursuant to the CEQA guidelines. We did issue the notice of intent, which was filed with the county as we're required by law. It was also published in the newspaper. Opportunity for any member of the committee, or I'm sorry, any member of the City of Reedley to provide comment on that document. And when we issue it in the paper and record it, that actually commences a 20-day period, which actually concluded on March 4th. Now, that being said, I will say, it is staff's opinion that if somebody had made a comment even after the 4th or even between the 5th and today, we seriously would have considered it. But I can tell you we've received no comment and no phone calls with regards to this project. On February 12th, the notices, again, as I mentioned, was published in the newspaper. And then pursuant to the code, we noticed everybody in the surrounding the property. We typically, state law requires 300 feet. We typically go 350 just to be safe and make sure we pick up everybody. We don't miss anybody is probably a better way to put it. If you may recall, on March 5th, you were asked to continue the matter. On that agenda, there were three items. A fourth was added, which is the development agreement, which I spoke to very briefly. But, because of that change, this meeting was again re-agendized as well as re-noticed. So, again, as much as you set it for time certain, staff could have just moved forward because you did set it, but we felt like it was really important to make sure that it was, again, noticed in the paper. This is the noticing diagram, if you will, so you can see everybody who was received a notice within the 350 feet area. And it's 350 feet from the boundary, not the center of the property. Therefore, staff is recommending to you that you approve the environmental assessment number 2014-21. It's the mitigated negative declaration dated for February 11th, and you are recommending that to the City Council for their approval. Similarly, we're recommending that you approve the conditional use permit, and you recommend to the City Council their consideration and approval. Let me just stop right there because I did kind of go over something a little bit quickly, and you may be thinking it's contradictory to what we talked about Monday night. In the municipal code, under mixed use, under certain circumstances that I described earlier with respect to mixed use in an industrial area, it does take your unanimous vote to recommend for ultimately the decision of the council what they want to do with the conditional use permit, which is a little contrary to what we talked about, because last Monday we talked about you having discretionary authority over site plans and CUPs. In this case, the code was created that way because, of course, industrial property is always very valuable. And so the thresholds were set very high that if you're going to make that conversion, it required your unanimous approval as well as approval by City Council. It's also recommended that you approve the draft agreement. Staff will continue to work with the developer to fine-tune it, and the developer has been gracious enough to work with staff, and we've all agreed that April 3rd is going to be that deadline. I've committed to you, and it's in writing in the staff report. If there's a material change, we'll bring it back to you. We don't anticipate that happening at all, but you have my assurance that should that happen, we'll be back before you. Otherwise, we're on to council. That being said, the last action of this evening related to this project is your approval of vesting tentative track number 6096. You do have that discretionary authority to approve that. Of course, it will be contingent upon everything else being approved by the council. That concludes staff's report. We strongly urge you to unanimously approve this project. We think it's a great project. The ends have been absolutely wonderful folks to deal with for the last, I was reminded the other day, year plus, in which I retorted, we've been having fun. I think the gentleman here, Jeff Wolpert, has been he is a representative and does a lot of the realty work, as I understand it. He's been fantastic to work with. The gentleman right here Kurt Johansson has been phenomenal to work with, and it's been a great project and a privilege for staff to see this unfold over the last year, but also a real privilege to stand before you and bring to you what we believe is a fantastic project with lots of opportunities for great things in Reedley, new people, new homes, a new way of looking at planning and development, and I just can't speak highly enough of the people that are behind this, as well as the project in and of itself. That being said, that concludes my report, and I will be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have prior to turning it over to the public.
Commissioners, you guys have any concerns, questions?
I have a question, Kevin.
Sure.
Looking at the aerial photograph, I think it's like page, not the aerial, the site plan, page three or something, three or four. The roundabout there to the north, are the geometrics of that roundabout similar to the one on Button Willow and Dinuba as far as the size? And the reason I'm asking is I'm wondering, is that going to result in any needed land to the north, any take of land to the north?
So I can answer that in two ways. The short answer is I think John Robertson, our city engineer, worked with their engineer to make sure that it is expandable. And if I remember correctly, don't hold me to it, it was 135-foot radius, mm-hmm. which gave them that opportunity for future development. That's one half of the answer. The other half of the answer is that this was designed, and the reason it kind of drops down, if you will, is so that it did not require any acquisition to the north.
Okay.
And we specifically did that because it's our understanding the developer is really ready to go, and they're like ready to go.
Yeah.
And so we really kind of felt like if we had pushed it to the north, which would have changed those geometrics to be maybe a little straighter lines, that could have slowed the project down to some degree while they're acquiring right-of-way and those kinds of things, and it could have been costly to the developer. So the developer and the city really agreed if we can just drop it down a little bit, then it really alleviates a ton of problems. And can easily get everybody where they need to be, no pun intended, in a timely manner.
Thanks.
Kevin, under the PowerPoint, the Reedley Municipal Code, that term modified property development, is that what you spoke to? Is that what your previous explanation was about? That term modified property development standards are proposed?
No. There's kind of two components. Again, and we mentioned the conditional use permit. The conditional use permit actually serves three functions. And it says modified property development standards are proposed through the Kings River Master Design Guidelines. So one of the things that the code allows developers to do is modify development standards. But in order to do that, you have to go through a conditional use permit. The developer has proposed to modify some street standards, primarily, and some setback standards. Those are addressed through that Kings River Village Master Design Guidelines. I would submit to the commission that one of the underlying tenets of the project in and of itself is that it is a walkable community. Therefore, streets become narrower, unlike Parlier. I mean, that's three streets wide, right? I mean, won't you agree? When you drive down Parlier, I mean, that's like a super highway. It's so dang wide.
Which part of Parlier are you talking about?
Well, not the county part.
Okay.
From Redeemer's Church east.
Yeah.
So from basically Frankwood, right, all the way to Reed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could drive three trucks side by side.
And I've seen that happen.
On one side, yeah, right? So, because this really is designed as a walkable community, they've asked to modify some of those design standards, and we're good with that. I mean, that's not a problem. It's allowable under the code. You really don't kind of get some of the dimensioning because we shrunk it to 8.5 by 11 so you could see it. But yeah, that's very typical. In years past, we would have called it a PUD, which this, sort of is, but sort of isn't for a variety of other technical reasons, which that's a whole nother workshop. Their design guidelines are very well put together. We've provided those to you in the packet. The developer and I work very closely together. Really appreciated all the hard work that they did to help create a process that everybody clearly understands. It's clearly articulated as to what the expectations are, how things will progress through the implementation of those guidelines. So we're very, very pleased with that component. Yes, sir.
During the build, the phase of the roundabout, will traffic need to be detoured, or we're going to make allowances for traffic to flow straight through east and west?
We will be able, according to our city engineer, when they develop this, they'll be able to phase the construction in a way that they will be able to make it with as minimal disruption at all, and they would not be closing down the entire street. One of the conditions of approval, and I'm sure you probably picked up on this, is that the conditions do require that with the first phase come along all the improvement plans. So it'll be road, sewer. So all that will be up front, a master grading plan. So when that first phase comes in, all those utilities will be designed for all the rest of the phases, or really for the entire project. We think that's really important. The developer does as well, because the worst thing that can happen is the last phase is happening, and you're trying to hook up a 10-inch water line to a 8-inch supply line, and those never work out really well. So we've appreciated the developer understanding those are, that's just something that's really important to the city. But they also, and I will commend them, they understand the importance it is to them, because they have a real problem if they don't do that along with us in the very beginning. So we've really appreciated working together to, ferret out how all this will come together in a really nice, efficient way.
Any more questions? Thank you, Kevin.
Do you want to turn it over to the public?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody wants to make a comment or just approach and talk to the commission, you're more than welcome to do so. If you do, just state your name and your address, please, and we can go from there. But absolutely, go ahead.
Thank you, commissioners. My name is Kirk Johansson, 516 Jade Street, Petaluma, California. I am the managing member of the development team, and just really want to thank all of you for the hard work you've put in to analyze this pretty big project. It's only 40 acres, but there's a lot in it, and I know it's a lot of work to look through the documents, and there are some wonderful concepts at work here that may be first time for Reedley, and that always puts a little bit more burden on commissioners to look through stuff. But primarily what I want to do is not only thank all of you, but thank the staff, because this is a project that required a lot of work. And we've had just as much of a wonderful experience working with both Nicole and Kevin and Ellen and everybody, actually, and Reedley on solving problems. There's always problems to be solved. But we've come up with a project that we think is iconic for the Central Valley. We believe that this is going to just further enhance the image of Reedley. And I can tell you for sure, because I get around the state a fair amount, there are a lot of people watching to see that this can be done. So I'm crossing my fingers that we can actually do it. But I want to thank you all for all your hard work here, and I really appreciate the time and attention you've put into this. Thank you.
Mr. Thanks. Johansson, before you leave, when I was in the L.A. area, there were some projects that were going on. Whether they ever came to fruition, I'm not sure. Where would you recommend we can look at some this type of scenario that we have here in Reedley?
That's a good one. We do have some projects in the Bay Area that mix uses as much as this does. We do also have some that maybe don't mix as much but are very walkable, like this one is. But then when you add in the transportation component, we're fairly cutting edge. I've done some work in the Seattle area. We have a couple of projects up there. If you will indulge me, what I would be happy to do is send to Kevin a couple of examples. We'll email them over, and then he can distribute them, and that way you can go online and take a look. Off the top of my head, I think I need to think a bit, but I'll definitely get a couple of examples to you.
So you think this is one of the first in California? Is that what you're saying?
Well, yeah, when you combine all of the parts, it's pretty forward thinking. I mean, there's nothing in this project that hasn't been done before. So I don't want you to think that we're that cutting edge. Water reclamation, walkability, transit, high density, I'll just anecdotally, I'll give you an example. So many people have looked at this, asked me, why is there a park in the middle? So that's almost a 3-acre park in the middle of the project. Right next door is a 50-acre city park. And so some people who are in the industry have said, well, why don't you take that 3 acres and give it to the residents next door, put it in their backyards? Why build a park at all? You got a park next door. And what I've had to explain to people is what's changing in California is consumers. They want the efficiency of being able to have common space, but not necessarily the maintenance hassle of it. And so in getting higher density with nice housing, but also sort of a common backyard. The idea is it's a 3-acre park that's really for the community. That kind of thinking, it's harder to find examples. I can give you a couple, but when you take that and the transit and the sustainability features of this project and package them all, I would say Reedley is going to be right up there with putting itself on the map. So we feel it's really important that this get built, not only for Reedley, but for a lot of other people too. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Rick Tice, 11190 Peaks Pike Road, Greaton, California. I've been an advocate for smart growth for about 15 or 20 years. And I've been a friend of Kurt's for a long time, and when he asked me to participate in this project, I was absolutely delighted. It's my first experience being a developer, and it's been really great meeting Kevin and coming down here and working on this project, and I can't tell you how proud I am to be a part of this. Thank you.
Any more comments? No? Okay. Thank you. So this is the portion that, anybody? No?
Why are you pointing at me?
Well, why are you pointing at me?
Because it looked like you wanted to say something.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
We have to get some local flavor.
I'm Jan Enns.
I'm Ken Enns.
And we are at 5878 Avenue 430 in Reedley.
And we're not fighting over the microphone. So.
But we just wanted to let you guys know, when we first started talking with Jeff and Kurt and initially with Kevin, it was like, well, we don't want to do something where downtown is not going to feel good about it, or, you know, we really were thinking about that. And so then as we talked through it, well, is there any way we can have the rail to trail, you know, hook everything together? Well, yeah, that was a done deal. And we were talking to our crew boss who lives in the house that shows up on the site map there, and we were telling him about it. He goes, I want to live there. And we said, well, you know what? You probably can, you know. And so it's just been so nice for us. And talking to a school board member, and she goes, can I have a copy of that? This just is the coolest thing. knowing that it's going to go next to where their transportation thing is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you can talk about
I talked to Chuck Bowen. You probably know Chuck at Reedley Lumber. Kind of described the project to him a little bit, and he was like, this sounds great, you know.
So and he's Chamber of Commerce, so that made us feel good. So we just wanted you to know, I mean, this isn't something we've done lightly, that we really have thought about how it impacts Reedley and the people that we know, and we've lived here our whole lives. Well, I moved here when I was 3, but that was a long time ago. So,
wasn't
yeah, a long time ago. So anyway, we just wanted you guys to know that we do really care about Reedley, and we just think that this is something that can be just a nice shining star, really. I think it's going to be, and over by the sports park, I think there's a lot of potential there too. Yeah. So.
And we're downtown people, you know. We didn't want to adversely affect downtown at all. We want to enhance downtown.
Yeah.
And we think with this project and the rails to trails that that'll happen. That'll still be, because
yeah.
Reedley has a great downtown and we want to keep it that way.
Yeah.
So okay.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
I do have a question, if anybody can answer the question. It's just about timeline. Is there any timeline or a projective timeline that you guys expect this project to move forward, to break ground, any of that nature, if it goes through?
So we can both address that. So
I don't want to hear from him.
I know you don't, but so actually the development agreement does say they must commence within 5 years.
Okay.
But that being said, I think there's a better answer in all the interest that's been shown and people looking at you for your decisions so they can move forward. And hopefully that was a nice segue for you, Kurt.
It was perfect. Thank you so much. You know, I could even ask Mr. Wolpert to speak to this. He has been working both for the property owners as well as us on helping figure out the uses of the property. And so this master plan, to a great degree, was influenced by his local knowledge of the development interests here. And we believe that the economy is really getting revved up. I mean, it looks like for the next couple of years, things should continue to improve. And in the development business, that's a good time to actually be moving forward. No one ever knows when the next recession's coming. We do know there will be another recession. We hope it's a long way out. But timing is so important on these kinds of things. So you kind of have to go when it's time to go. So with Jeff's help, we believe we've identified several users. One of the tricky things about mixed use is the way the development business works, it's like most industries in the country. People specialize. They segment. So somebody who does senior housing typically gets really good at that, and then they don't do anything else. People who do retail, they understand retail, but they typically don't do senior housing. So when you mix uses, it becomes a little bit more challenging because you're looking for compatible interests there. You're not going to really find one developer who says, oh, I do all that, and I'm really good at all that. Mm-hmm. So that's a challenge, but Jeff has been on board since the beginning, has identified a number of users. So I would think that we would try to get those people in place as fast as we can and take advantage of this healthy economy. And, you know, hopefully it goes on for a few years and then these long time frames don't come into play. Those long time frames in the development agreement are obviously set up if we unfortunately hit another downturn. We don't want to have to start over again. So, but hopefully not. We're gonna have a long, extended bull market here for a while, I hope, because 2008 was very painful, as you all know.
Yes, yep. It was.
Hope I answered.
Thank you. Yes, you did. Okay, commissioners. Well, we have a couple things to vote on. We have a resolution that has, if you look at your packet here, it combines A, B, and C as one under resolution 20-15-04. And then we have D, which is a separate resolution. And the first three are to recommend to the City Council approval, and the D is for approval by us, the vesting map. So I'm going to go ahead and do A, B, and C together. So I'm going to read this resolution. We're going to go ahead and have a first, a second, and a roll call. And then we'll move on to the D, section D, and then we'll do the same. Is that okay? Okay, so before us we have resolution number 2015-04, which is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission recommending to the City Council approval of one, environmental assessment number 2014-21, dated February 11, 2015, two, conditional use permit application number 2014-05, and the draft development agreement related to the proposed Kings River Village mixed-use project. Do I have a initial first to approve?
I make a motion we approve 2015-04.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ellen, can we get a roll call?
Mm-hmm. Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutierrez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. And second, we have resolution number 2015-05, section D, which is to approve the vesting tentative map number 6096, which was provided to us, dated December 17, 2014, authorizing the subdivision of land pursuant to Subdivision Map Act. Do we have a first to approve this vested tentative map?
I would recommend that we approve that.
Do I have a second?
Second that.
Okay, roll call please.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Gutierrez?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. Okay, thank you. We're gonna take a 5-minute recess. Thank you for everybody coming. You can go ahead and leave if you want, but we're gonna take a 5-minute recess and we're gonna continue this meeting. Thank you. All right, so now we're going to go ahead and recess is over now. So we got public hearings done. And we're going to go to number 3 on the agenda. So that's consideration of proposed development impact fee program updates. Please, Kevin.
So as kind of a segue, I want to thank the commission for indulging me and giving me a minute or two for the recess. That was really important because I wanted to make sure the developer and the landowner were and the city were all in sync. And the reason that that's so important is because tomorrow I have to get to Ellen, my boss, the newspaper article, the public hearing notice, so that she can get it in the paper, so it will get published a week later to be in ample time, accordance to the requirements of the code, so we can get to public hearing on the 14th of April. I want to thank the commission very much for that indulgence. That being said, I'm really glad to be here and to talk to you about the development impact fee. To me, this is really important, not so much the topic itself, but I'm really looking forward to the commission's input. Again, as I talked on Monday, it's really important for staff. From staff's perspective, we think it's really important for you to see these things before they go to City Council. This is in your area of expertise. These are things you will see and face regularly. The project you just approved has about $9 million in development impact fees. So, you just kind of go like, wow. So I just think it's really important for you to weigh in on this stuff so that the council understands you've had a first bite at the apple and you're behind this, not just staff kind of running out, bringing it to them. So that being said, I know everybody knows this, and it's at the June 28th, 1994 was an important date. I'm just kind of kidding. But it was the date in which the enabling legislation related to the current development impact fee was established by the council. The council at that time set basically 12 categories. These are the categories. They make a lot of sense in some ways. They're very detailed. When we talk about streets and thoroughfares, it's completely different than traffic control facilities. Or another good example is the water supply holding versus distribution. So they did a very detailed way in which they put those development impact fees together. Made a lot of sense for a number of years. They were updated in 2003, 2005, you may recall that. But the update process in and of itself is staff did put together a request for proposal. We solicited consultants. The consultant went through an interview process, and on August 14th of 2014, the council entered into a professional agreement with David Tosick and Associates to complete the development impact study. David Tosick representatives, Nathan Perez and his team, were more than happy to come. But I'm a little cheap and said, nah, I'll take care of this one and save the city a few bucks. And so they're not here tonight, but they will be here, presuming that this goes on to council. As you might recall, staff did present both to the Planning Commission as well as the City Council an overview of what the AB 1600 process is. We talked about the government code. We talked about reliance upon documents such as the Sports Park Master Plan or the Integrated Master Plan for Potable Water, Sewer, and Storm Drain.
We got it.
So the update in and of itself relies upon all these technical studies, inclusive the projects or the reports I just mentioned, but also the general plan and the city's capital improvement project list. On the 9th of December, staff brought to the City Council a list of projects. Those projects were detailed in terms of streets projects, law enforcement projects, fire projects, parks and rec, storm drain, etc. We presented those to the council. The council had discussion. This council provided direction to staff. And on December 22nd, staff brought back that project list with a signal. We added the project which involved the signalization of Banning Avenue at the quarter and eighth mile intersections. That then became the project list. The project list, as approved by the City Council, was then passed on to the consultant. The consultant's role was then to basically look at growth and distribution. And what they did was they saw where we're going to grow in terms of population and how we grow in terms of land use. And then they distribute those costs across, you know, the growth population, the growth of the population, as well as the land uses being primarily, you know, residential, commercial, industrial, etc. The it's often this justification, this the actual nexus. I apologize. The nexus study, as it's commonly referred to, is really the development impact justification fee study. So it wraps all of those things up and says, here's a justification for all these fees based on your population, your land uses, etc. Which again, as the slide references, and the key term is the reasonable relationship between the needs of the city, which is a project list, and the types of development, industrial, commercial, residential, of which impacts are imposed. The proposed fee categories are now being proposed to be collapsed from 12 to 8. And there's a couple reasons that that's being suggested. One, because the current fees are, you know, the current fees are very specific. So it's only for signalization or only for water distribution. So one of the problems that we've had, and the glaring problem is, and I think everybody knows this, is in the parks. They have a lot of money in one fund and no money in the other fund. You can't use money from that was collected from one park fee for the open space. So we've created very narrow categories. And that has really hindered the city in many ways. So another example would be, you know, if we had collected $2 million in water facilities or water supply, well, you know what? That's great. That means if we ever want to build a surface treatment plant, we got plenty of money. But if we needed to pull a trunk line a mile for new development, we'd have no money because the distribution facilities category doesn't have enough money for the project. Does that make any sense?
It does, in that what you're trying to explain, I kind of feel like just to me, Kevin. But
oh, no, no.
No, because I'm looking at you going, I really want to be sure I understand what the idea he's trying to pass along, is that once we put money into a certain category, just because something that's very related to it is in need of some financial support, we cannot deviate from what we intended on that category.
Do you want to finish the presentation? Because that was wonderful.
No, Kevin.
But yes, that is in a very succinctly way what I was trying to articulate to you, and I thank you. So yeah, that's it. You know, and Parks and Rec is a good example. We have a park and rec fee that's collected a lot of money, but we have an open space that hasn't collected the money, but we can't use the park and rec fee in the open space, but they're so closely related that, like, you kind of go, like, why can't you? Well, because that's the way it was originally set up. So we think that by broadening the categories or collapsing categories, which creates a broader definition, is really to everyone's benefit. But in doing so, I want to be really careful and make sure that the commission understands we can only do things that are on the project list. It's not free money that comes in that you can go do stuff. It's based on that list. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And that list is in your packet, which is part of the Nexus study or the justification study.
Is this a condensed version?
What?
Is this your proposal of the condensed version?
Yeah. It's going eight categories.
Previous slide. Yeah.
These are the These are the eight. Yeah,
right. Those are the eight.
The eight right here.
Yeah. Okay. And here's the 12.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. So these are the original 12. These are what we're going to.
Okay.
Now, in all of that, one of the things I can tell you and that we're very pleased about is that we started this project with some assumptions and constraints, and we have held true to those as to what kind of came out of the end of the study or what the study reflects. And so, one, we wanted to make sure that the outcome was truly based on the technical studies that we have in our hand. So when you look at the projects, those on the projects list, those are the same projects that you're going to see in the integrated master plan for water or sewer. So we didn't go, well, you know, that's really nice, but we want to really do this. Or we really want to do this, but it's not part of those studies. So we are using the studies that have been approved. So they're not just sitting up on a shelf collecting dust. So we think that was really important, that there's a rational basis to all the projects that are on that project list, which is the basis to the fees. We follow and adhere to the same hierarchy, meaning we all kind of intuitively go, so if you were going to say what creates the most impact, we'd all probably go multiple family, right? That creates the greatest impact on water, sewers, you know, storm drain. The next tier down is single family. The next tier down is commercial. The next tier down is industrial. The way the fees, and I'll go through the fees in just a minute for you, that hierarchy was maintained. They at the end of the day, did the same thing, and we think that's a really good thing, that those that have the highest impact pay the most. right? Those who have the least, yeah, it's an equity issue. We like the fact that they also continued the focus on the essentials. Streets, sewer, water, storm drain. Those are things that are critical to development. Yes, we have a category called general facilities, but it's, you know, I'll show you a pie chart or a bar chart in a minute. You know, the yellow is not like huge in comparison to the biggest categories are those essentials. So we think that was important. We maintain the idea, and I'm so pleased because I can honestly stand up here and say there were no preconceived notions. We didn't say this is the dollar amount, this is the project, this is where we have to be. None of that. We just said, take it for what it is, and like we'll just see where the chips fall. And so from the staff's perspective, we believe it was a really honest project. We didn't load up a bunch of projects to artificially either increase the rates or decrease the rates. We didn't load up a bunch of projects knowing we wouldn't get them accomplished, which allows the city to collect a bunch of money and front load, collect the money, so it's easier for us to do projects because we have the money, right? We also very much appreciated that when you look at how we compared to our neighboring cities, we wanted to be competitive, and we are, and I'll show you that in a minute. And then the last thing is that the planning horizon is about a 5 to 7 years. So about 5 to 7 years from now, I'll be standing here telling you the same thing again. That being said, here's the chart that shows the existing fee structure to what is the new development structure and to what is called the city center. Right now, the way we have it or the way it's been constructed is you have an existing fee and then you have an infill fee. The infill fee is not well defined, not really sure in the enabling legislation what it was meant to be or what it's to accomplish. But that being said, right now the existing fee for residential is $16,328 and it's going to $16,478. Very much comparable in the multiple family. And remember, those are per unit costs. So if for a multiple family you had, 10 units, you know, it's $110,000 is what you would pay in development impact fees. The areas that were...
Can you say that again? Yep, that last part again.
Okay, so it's a per unit cost.
On the multiple family.
And the single family.
Yeah. So the multiple family, those amounts are per
unit. So if
a unit being a living unit.
Correct. So if you built an apartment complex with 10 apartments, you would pay 10 times $10,995, or in essence $111,000, right?
Now, I like, this is the standard model, right?
Well, I don't know
now,
that
not the amounts, but in terms of the per unit, the fact that it's per unit as opposed to per square foot, that's a fairly standard way to approach it.
I think so,
because I think I kind of like that approach. But I think some people would say, well, why isn't it per square feet? Is there a reason other than is this a fairly standard?
I think it's a fairly standard rubric.
Right.
That, you know, you're looking at housing units. Mm-hmm. A unit is, you know, there's variables within both single family and multiple family, meaning... A unit is a unit. It doesn't make any difference if it's a one-bedroom, two-bedroom, or three-bedroom. The impact is X. Similarly, with a single family, you know, those are huge ranges. 5,000-square-foot home pays the same. 16,000 is a 10,000-square-foot home. So, but it's, generally speaking, the same occupancies, right? 3-4 people, drink about the same amount of water every day, flush the toilets, generally speaking, about the same. So it does tend to be on a per unit. That's my experience. I could be wrong, but typically it is kind of structured in that way. Whereas commercial tends to be more a square footage, and people understand that square footage component, and that's just kind of the way it works out. The interesting part to the city, and I will just say this because I've heard this enough times. Why are you going from 1178? You know, look, you're taking advantage of us. Well, you know what? I guess I would argue those who paid $11.78 for their development, look around. Look around. Really is far better than, you know, go to some other city that doesn't.
And the communities that have this implemented, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we generated money, but we have really good streets for the most part. We have signals. We have, I mean, right now, no other city can grow because they don't have water capacity. Our water treatment plant, which we made an investment in, we're at 1.8, 1.9 million gallons a day with a capacity up to 5.2. Can Sanger do that? Can Selma do that? None of those have the ability to do that. We can. So you could argue two ways. And I've kind of thrown this out when I visited with the chamber folks. You could argue, and I like to think, there was an investment made in the city through new development that made Reedley the quality that it is. And I feel pretty passionate about that because we have some really great things that other cities don't. We don't have some of the problems that other cities do. Conversely, I could also argue before you that the city should have been looking at this fee more than once or twice since 1994. Because in 2003 and then again in 2005, that $11.78 was right in the middle when you looked at comparison to other cities. For a variety of reasons, it's changed over time. So we just didn't keep pace. Shame on us. But part of that argument is we're doing the right thing now. We could have just not done any of this and gone about our way. So I can argue, you know, hey, you paid more. Great. Thank you very much. You made really a great place. I could also argue, hey, commend city staff because we stuck our neck out and took a chance and it worked out that there's really... It's time to really roll that back. At the same time, there's a third column up there called the city center. And the city center is basically what we believe is the core of the city. There's not a person I've met that doesn't believe in the downtown or think it should be supported in some way. And we felt important as a staff and an administration to incentivize that in some way. So what we did was we sat down, we said, in the city center, development will receive a 25% reduction of their impact fees.
Can you tell us what the city center measurement is?
Right there.
Next screen?
Next screen?
Next page, if I flipped it.
It's just outside your restaurant.
So don't...
You
know, don't tell them I paid you to ask that question, so make me look good. So what we did was, this is the city center boundary. So we felt like everything that is in the city center boundary ought to receive that benefit.
All the 45-degree streets.
That's right.
Yeah.
What is it, parallel to the railroad?
So it's actually Reed, North, Dinuba, and is it, I can't read
East.
East Avenue.
Which goes north and south.
Yeah. Now.
Is it that kind of
fun? I know. Okay, so when I, when I first started, well, it was a long time ago. So I always thought it was really funny. I worked at the rec center. And the rec center's, it's 100 North. East Street. Mm-hmm. Okay, now what kind of address is that?
Yeah.
Like, is it Northeast Street or is it
what
North
is it?
Yeah. East Street? Yeah, it was both, exactly. But to get back to the topic, we felt like we needed to do something. And I don't think anybody would argue that this isn't the right thing to do. And it is a way to incentivize the downtown. Now, that being said, there's a couple things I kind of want to share maybe a little bit of detail, because you're the Planning Commission. I think you ought to know. In the resolution that's before you and in the staff report, it talks about the implementation of the fee. One of the things that I did when I got here was I said, look, if you know, we kind of came across some situations where people had paid a fee, had developed when there was an impact fee, and they had, you know, paid X amount of dollars, and then were doing more development. Well, there was nothing kind of on the books about how do you manage that. So one of the things we put into this fee structure was we memorialized how those situations would be handled, which is basically very simple, and this is what it is. If you want to develop downtown, you know, you have a building, you want to reuse that building, and you can show us that you paid development impact fees, then we only charge you the delta between the new fee and what you paid.
Wow.
Right? It's fair. You paid based on your proposed or alleged or, you know, whatever the impact was of your business at that time. If you're intensifying your business and or expanding it, you're creating a new impact. Well, we shouldn't charge you the whole new impact again, right? So
what if the city owes you money then?
Well,
it's going to be on the front page.
The likelihood of that happening, slim and none.
Yeah.
But it's one of those, we have probably a dozen situations that I can think of where that's come up, and it was never contemplated in any of the old material or how it would be handled. So we said, look, let's memorialize. These are one of the things we face all the time. So if somebody paid impact fees, they simply would have to show us what they paid. I mean, we calculate the new fee. If they paid X, all you do is pay the difference. The other component that is new is if you expand your business, you pay on the expanded area only, because you're creating a new impact. Sorry, if you're a restaurant downtown and you knock out a wall and all of a sudden you got, you know, 100 or 1,000 square feet more of building, and you got to put in 3 more commodes and, you know, all the impacts that come with that, you only pay on that portion that's expanded, not the whole thing. We don't reach back and go, oh, you never paid on the first 10,000 square feet you had, so we're going to go after you. No, 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 we're not doing that. All you're going to pay is the $7, if you're outside the circle, the $7.21 on that 100-foot or 1,000-foot that you expanded. If you're in the city, I think it's 5-something, 564, I think, you would pay that 564 times whatever that new impact is. So we also tried to look at it not only in terms of the fee structure, but the actual implementation practices that we would put in place to make it fair and equitable, as well as memorialize situations that we knew we were facing. So somebody could pick up the resolution that will eventually go to City Council and is really kind of in your staff report and the resolution you have before you, and really get a good understanding of what our fees are, what you pay on, how you pay, what you pay for commercial, industrial, so on and so forth. Again, inside of the triangle. The other thing that we did was, one of the things that I think was really good for us that is we actually created a public institutions category, which we never had before. So if the school district, Kings Canyon, came in and wanted to do a project, okay, what do we do? Are they a public project? Is this a private? Who are they? If the hospital district or the cemetery district, or Emmanuel comes in, do we charge them as commercial? Are they, you know, do we look at them as the, you know, their underlying zone district is residential, so do we charge them a residential rate? Well, they're building a 10,000 square foot gym. Well, that kind of doesn't work, so do we charge them a commercial rate? What we did was we kind of said, look, let's just create public institution rate, and I think it's $1.16 or $1.17 a foot. Do you want to go back in really quickly? The rates are set on 1,000 foot, but when we talk about them, it's on a per foot. So we and Reedley are accustomed to talking about a per foot cost, but it's really, you know, so if you look up there where it says $5,410 per 1,000 foot. That's kind of the way that gets put together. But it's really $5.41 a foot. Mm. So it's a little bit different, but we talk about, you know, the way it'll show up in the resolution, because it's more by 1,000 foot. But the way we talk about it is really in a per foot description. Again, this is the city center. This is the part, really, quite frankly, I think, to be honest with you, when we get to council and probably the planning commission, this and the next chart are really the two that talk the loudest and what everybody wants to know. It's not so much what the charge is, but how do we compare to our neighbors? Because obviously we don't want to be the most. I mean, the story goes, we don't want to be the most because then nobody will come and develop. We don't want to be the cheapest because we are not cheap, right?
Well, then you're not going to get quality projects.
Exactly. So this is one of those, you know, you kind of want to, like I heard somebody say, you always want to be one step behind the Joneses. And so I think what this shows is that we're right in the mix. We're not the highest. We're not the lowest. I was waiting for the question.
Yeah, I do have a question, actually. I was just okay. Taking a deep breath. These fees here, they pay for capital improvements to these different categories. The one I'm particularly asking the question about is the public safety police fee.
Right.
I notice it's a pretty drastic reduction. Does any of that money go toward paying for new police officers? Is that strictly from the general fund? And this is for improvements to the police facility.
Okay, so we had this conversation once before. The reality is the fee is based on what each department provided in the, we call it the book, their list of projects. So if you go, you know, I don't have my staff report in front of me, but in the actual in the actual Nexus study, there's a list of all the projects.
Okay, so they just have a list of projects. They add up what the cost of it is.
And then they distribute it.
Become a fee.
In this case, the police department is using development impact fees primarily for vehicle fleet replacement.
Okay.
So when you divide that out by the cost of 5 or 7 cars across 5 to 7 years, across, you know, it really becomes minimal. The CFD, that's a whole nother funding source. There's the sales tax override that goes to PD. Those are completely different sources. But you ask a really good question, and I think we've talked about this. The fee is based on two concepts. One, purely new development. Purely new development. But there's also a concept of, and I'm always really careful about using this term, replacement, because it's not replacement. Meaning you have a 5-inch water line running down Reed Avenue. Because you have new development, or better yet, sewer line running down Reed, because it's going to the plant, right? So now you have all this new development, and that line can't handle 5 inches anymore. It needs to be 7. Development impact fees can be used proportionally to pay for that upsizing. So, you know.
So an upgrade?
So an upgrade based on the impacts of the new development. So you have an existing condition that some of the money can be used to upgrade. Okay. You know, so it could pay the difference between whatever the cost of the 5-inch versus 12-inch, you know, $1 versus $3. So development impact fees can pay that $2. So, it, you know, it's not strictly new development, because new development causes impacts to existing systems. It'll pay that proportionality to upgrade it. So if you look at the neighborhood, we're basically right in the middle. In hindsight, and I'll tell the commission this, I probably now, knowing what I know and what I've learned through this, because, you know, every city's different the way we all put it together, I probably would not have picked Kingsburg and Dinuba as comparison cities. For this reason, Kingsburg has a growth policy of 2% per year. So their costs are pretty much fixed. I mean, if we grow, we'll grow 2% a year no matter what. We kind of, I mean, that's been the trend, 1.9. So they have fixed that growth, which means they fixed their costs, which means they really don't ever need to increase their development impact fees, because it is a fixed and known rate that will occur over time. Dinuba, interestingly enough, on the flip side, because they have such high sales tax generators, Reese Foods, Walmart, Target, you know,
Best Buy,
they, you know, they're swimming in money. So for them, if you look at it, I mean, just look at theirs. They have, what, six colors? You know, we got eight. And what are those colors? Public safety, parks and rec. I'm getting old. I can't see that
storm
far.
Storm drain.
Actually, they don't have a public safety fee.
Mm-mm. Oh, the red. They have
the
fire.
Public safety, they don't.
Oh, so they, okay, so they have, fire.
They have fire, but not
they
not
don't
police.
Have, yeah, they don't have general, yeah. So, I mean, it's good to know that, and it's good to understand the dynamics, but I think if we're trying to look at apples to apples, you know, probably would have dropped those two off.
So impact fees are or should be a function of what?
Impacts.
How much is needed?
Impact of new growth.
Tied strictly then, or not strictly, but tied mostly to a growth pattern, a growth rate. Okay.
So they're basically, if Ron, you
well,
decide.
A growth, well, Dinuba's not a good example then. To a growth rate or. Because Dinuba, like you said, they're swimming in money because of these businesses.
Right, sales tax. So think about it this way.
Yeah.
In the city of Reedley, Ron Hudson Enterprises shows up one day. And Ron Hudson Enterprises annexes 10 acres, 20 acres, and builds 20 homes. Those homes demand public services, right? You demand water, and you demand sewer, storm drain. Now, today, there's plenty of storm, there's plenty of sewer capacity. But you know what? You, because you're now new and hooking in, you're creating a drag on that system, right? So your fees are going to pay for that. $5 a home.
Paying for future.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's because as you add on and the next guy adds on, eventually we're going to have to expand, right? So you're helping keep pace. You're paying for the impact.
But the next town may not have that
same fee.
Because of, and I'm not quarreling. I'm just saying, I'm trying to get a relationship. Is it strictly growth?
It is strictly growth. But here's where cities differ. Okay, in the city, you're going to pay $5 for that sewer hookup and impact fees because that's what it costs the city of Reedley. Well, the city of Reedley also generates $1, you know, a year in sales tax. Well, let's take Dinuba. Dinuba, you know what? It's still $5 to hook up, but you know what? They generate $10 in sales tax. So you know what? We want to keep encouraging. So you know what? We're going to charge $3, and it's okay because we have $10 in sales tax.
Yeah, but it's still basically a function of growth. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
As opposed to Kingsburg, which says, "Hey, you know what? It's really
we don't have growth.
We don't have growth. We've fixed it. And you know what? Our growth, we know every year because we set it at 2%." Is $3. So they just plow along. I think it's also a function, and I think this is really more important conversation about not is it a function of growth, but it's a function of what do you want your community to look like. If you don't charge enough money to generate good roads or signalization, what do you get? And you're trying to find that balance one step behind the Joneses, right? Now, I've made the argument publicly, and I will maintain it, you know, for a long time. Is it great that we're reducing the fee from $11 to $7? Absolutely. But the $11 fee, in my mind, going to $7 is an issue of equity, not an issue of hindrance of development. Because if that were the case, then why would we get a Dollar General? Why would we get Sears? Why would we get Ace Hardware? Why would we get Les Schwab? Why would we get a new doctor's office? Why would we get a new medical 9,000 square foot building? They're all paying it and they know it's a cost of business. So the fee in and of itself is going down, at least from staff's position, because it's equitable. It's the right thing to do, not because it's scaring off development. But that's the easy argument. Oh, we got to lower because development's not coming. It's not true. If you understand how development operates, it is coming. They want to be here. They want to make money. You know, it's not something that's stopping people from developing in Reedley. But that's the economic side of it, not the rational mathematical side, which is growth, land use, so on and so forth. Okay. Gosh, this was supposed to be the shorter of the two presentations. Okay, so community outreach. We do want to let you know that we've met with community members, and we've met with the chamber folks, and we have had resounding support for this for the justification study. And I think there are two reasons. One, they appreciate what the city's doing. They're trying to make it equitable. We've not backed into this. We have kept that hierarchy to where multiple family is still paying the most. Commercial is paying, you know, two rungs down. Industrial is paying the least. And that being said, the development impact fee study and the proposed fee is statutorily exempt. Sorry, it's been a long time. And that's pursuant to Public Resource Code 21080, Section B, Paragraph 8. And it's also categorically exempt from CEQA with respect to Section 15273. Therefore, staff is recommending to you that you approve the justification study and the proposed fee program update. And we also are asking you to recommend the same approval to the City Council. That concludes staff's report. Thank you very much. And I'm more than happy to answer any questions you might have. And good conversation. Keep asking questions. I appreciate it. Keeps me on my toes.
I want to see the volume of notes that go into this study. It must be incredible.
You know, we have been, with respect to staff, you know, we sat down, and actually, to be honest with you, it was really easy. It was really easy because all we did was we flapped open, you know, the sports park master plan and said, here are the projects. What's reasonable in the next 5 years? You know, that integrated master plan for water. We just said, okay, what are the projects in the next 5 years? What are the next projects? You know, so it actually, in many ways, it was very, very simple. And so, you know, there was a reason that we got the urban water management plan done, a reason why we got those integrated plans done, and we should be using them. I mean, I would think the Planning Commission and City Council would expect staff to be relying on those things. It costs a lot of money and a lot of engineering and technical certified smart people doing stuff to it that, you know, we should be relying on those, not just kind of dreaming up projects, which that's fun, but, you know, you never know how that part works out. So, questions?
Not for me, no. All right. Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks.
So, Commission, we have agenda number 3 here, and we have been hearing Kevin's pitch here for resolution number 2015-06. So I'm going to go ahead and read this and then call for a vote. This is a resolution of the City of Reedley Planning Commission approving and recommending that the City Council also approves of the development impact justification study and proposed development impact fee program update. So I want to call this to a vote. Do I have a first? Anybody?
I'll I'll go ahead and I'll motion for approval.
Motion for approval. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Thank you. Ellen, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gutierrez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hudson?
Yes.
Commissioner Barcelos?
Yes.
Commissioner Perez?
Yes.
Chairman Custodio?
Yes. All right. So now we're on to more Kevin, the Community Development Director's Report, Section 4 and 5. So any updates?
Yeah, since Monday, 6 new projects have come in, and I want to go through each one of those with you.
You really want me to get fired, don't you?
Okay, so I actually thought about standing up tonight going, you have my staff report. Do you have any questions?
I did. What happened?
I was waiting for... I couldn't. There were too many people in the audience for me to do that.
They would have laughed?
They would have laughed, actually.
Let's be honest.
But I actually have nothing to report.
All right. Awesome. Thank you. Let's move on. Any future agenda items?
Before he realizes something.
Anybody have any recommendations? Are we good for April 2nd, the next meeting? Is that still good?
Don't look at me.
Well, she's still laughing, so.
She's trying to compose herself.
I am, yeah. Yes, we're still on for April 2nd.
All right, so let's make that a note and put on our calendars. We'll be here April 2nd for the review of a GP work implementation plan. See, I'm just... Yeah, I'm ready to go. All right.
Real quick, I did want to remind everybody that Monday the 30th is the new date for the ethics training. So if you're going, let me know.
Okay, what about the online?
Yes, if you need to do the online training and can't make it on the 30th, then you contact Sylvia and she should get you the information.
All right.
I'm going on the 30th.
Okay, thank you. Yeah,
it's 5:30 to 7:30?
Yes.
There'll be dinner provided? No, okay.
I don't know.
You better take your energy bar.
No, I'm doing online.
Just in case. And it will be here instead of, no.
You said community center.
Yeah,
the community center.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, you can just give me a thumbs up, thumbs down if you're going to make it or not.
Mr. Hudson, we were just talking about the mandatory ethics training we have on the 30th. And if you're going to attend, to let her know. If not, you can do it online and refer that to Ms. Sylvia Plata.
Yeah, I'm planning on doing that.
Because you really need that training.
I do.
Ethics.
I'll probably do both, yeah.
And we'll be here April 2nd. So plan on next meeting April 2nd. Okay.
Now, I may be out of town.
Yeah, it is spring break.
That's spring break.
Anyway, all right. Then if we have any more questions, concerns, I'm going to go ahead and adjourn. So thank you. Meeting.
Have a good night.